This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
More Clinton emails. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Kashenka. On this Monday, October 31st, Halloween. Glad you're with us. And here's what we have for you this hour.
The FBI has found some 650,000 emails on the laptop belonging to Huma Abedin, one of Hillary Clinton's top aides. It's not clear what's in them.
There appears to be a big swing among independent voters in Florida. Find out which way they now seem to be leaning.
A man suspected of killing two people and a shooting at police has been killed by an Oklahoma State trooper after a manhunt that lasted a week.
And how young adults in their 20s match up against their peers.
I would say the biggest takeaway here is that it pays to finish college, because people who had at least a bachelor's degree were just much more likely to meet some of these financial milestones, like paying off their student loans or buying a home.
Janelle Marte at the Washington Post on how your money habits compare to others in your age group. She's here in about 20 minutes. The FBI is taking a new look at presidential nominee Hillary Clinton's email use. Investigators say they found 650,000 emails on a laptop that they believe was used by former Congressman Anthony Weiner and his estranged wife, Huma Abedin, a top aide to Mrs. Clinton, the Democratic presidential nominee. This suggests that thousands of those messages could have been sent to or from Mrs. Clinton's private server. Virginia Republican Robert Goodlatte, chair of the House Judiciary Committee, told ABC's This Week that there are still lots of questions.
Why was five of her aides given immunity from prosecution? Why was a part of the immunity agreement to destroy laptops that contained this information after they looked at it?
It'll take weeks to determine if those messages are work-related, how many are duplicates that have been already reviewed, and whether they include classified information. California Congressman Adam Schiff is the ranking Democrat on that same committee.
To release this kind of ambiguous letter, these may be pertinent, they may be significant, they may not be significant, they may not be pertinent. That kind of an ambiguity bomb this close to election was a terrible lapse in judgment.
FBI Director James Comey notified Congress on Friday. That's created uneasiness. Senior Justice Department officials said doing that would violate policies about affecting an election. And some in the FBI have been unhappy at Mr. Comey's repeated public statements. Well, Hillary Clinton is in a dead heat with Donald Trump in Florida and holds a 6-point lead in North Carolina. According to new polls, Mrs. Clinton might need that cushion to absorb any fallout from the latest FBI review of Clinton-related emails. The Wall Street Journal, NBC News, Marist surveys conducted before the FBI's latest announcement found Mrs. Clinton leading by a single percentage point in Florida, 45% to 44%. It was 3 points last month. Mr. Trump, meanwhile, campaigned in Las Vegas yesterday.
I want to just tell you, the polls have come out and they have been amazing. Even before the big blow up on Friday, we're leading in many of the polls.
In North Carolina, Mrs. Clinton's lead of 47% to 41% had grown from a 4-point advantage earlier this month. She campaigned in Florida yesterday.
We won't be distracted no matter what our opponents throw at us. We're not going to be knocked off course. We know how much this election matters, and we know how many people are counting on us.
Mrs. Clinton's support has remained static in Florida, while Mr. Trump's has inched up since the previous poll in early October. Independent voters have swung to Mr. Trump, favoring him 41 to 36%. In their previous poll, Florida independents had favored Mrs. Clinton by 9 points. 8 days to go before Election Day. Meanwhile, the presidential campaign has thoroughly scrambled traditional positions on foreign policy and international intervention. Wall Street Journal reporter Jay Solomon says this has obliterated many of the usual partisan distinctions and presented political challenges for whoever wins next week. Jay set this up.
We started off looking at Hillary Clinton's kind of foreign policy background and the fact that her track record really is to the right of Barack Obama and whether it was support for the Iraq war, the military operations against Syria, even back to her husband's time, the military operations in the Balkans. She has a history of supporting U.S. military interventions internationally, and we were kind of looking at this dynamic, how much of the Democratic Party is now to the left of her pretty substantially, particularly with the Bernie Sanders crowd, and wondering, you know, if she wins, how will that impact her ability to sort of govern on internationally on her track record. But what was also interesting in this story was looking at Donald Trump, because Trump is kind of an anti-interventionist from the right. And when you look at these dynamics, yeah, it's a really kind of skewed political situation on foreign affairs, where you have traditional Republicans really coming out and supporting Hillary Clinton because they see her as being kind of more in line with traditional U.S. foreign policy. But she's being attacked by both the left and the right, and it does raise its questions how she'll actually run foreign policy if she wins.
Interesting. But that does not seem to be an issue here in the general election, does it?
No, foreign affairs are not that big as one might think, but, you know, Trump in the last debate did hit her pretty hard for her willingness to go into Syria. He pretty much has taken the line that, you know, that thing's a quagmire, we're not going to get in there. The best thing we can do is try to cooperate with the Russians and Vladimir Putin. And Hillary stuck to her line that she'd look to enforce a no-fly zone in Syria to protect civilians. So you definitely still see it. And, yeah, in a lot of ways, that it feels like there's a bit of a flip-flop with Hillary taking a line you'd usually or often associate with a Republican nominee.
Yeah. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal foreign affairs correspondent Jay Solomon. His piece is called Foreign Policy Debate Scrambled by 2016 Election. All right, so what about issues like sanctions against Russia or Iran, for example?
I mean, Hillary's people have been saying if she's elected, she'll start signaling even before she is actually inaugurated that there'll be new sanctions that she supports new range sanctions on Russia for what they've been doing in Syria and in the Ukraine, and that, you know, they'd seriously look at imposing new sanctions on Iran despite the nuclear agreement from last year, but this would be focused on their regional activities, their missile development, their human rights abuses. So they're signaling pretty aggressively that they'll take these steps if they're in the White House, and it's a different kind of message coming from Trump. He sounds like he does not want to confront the Russians. He attacks the Iran deal as being the worst deal ever negotiated. At the same time, he's kind of made talk about, you know, what sanctions are pointless. You know, if the place is going to be open, let's get our own business there. So there is a lot of divergence, and Hillary's people are basically putting out the message that they're gonna punch somebody in the mouth if they get elected on the international stage.
That's interesting. Have we seen this before? This kind of interventionist versus non-interventionist in these non-traditional roles, I guess?
Not really. I mean, President Obama was very much elected in 2008, arguing they were going to get out of Iraq and gradually get out of Afghanistan, and McCain and then Romney, you know, were much more hawkish. But, yeah, it was very much flipped. So I, in writing this story, I did try to find out the last time where you had this kind of role reversal, and you have to go way, way back.
Thanks, Jay. Wall Street Journal reporter Jay Solomon. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, Wix.com has something for you. Used by more than 84 million people worldwide, Wix.com makes it easy to get your website live today. You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from, and the drag-and-drop editor, there is no coding needed. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Wix.com empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy. And that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy and free. Go to Wix.com to create your own website today. The result is stunning. Thanks for being with us on this Monday, Halloween. A week-long manhunt for a suspect in Oklahoma has ended with a shootout that left the man dead in the western part of the state. Authorities say 38-year-old Michael Vance was shot and killed by an Oklahoma State trooper last evening near Leedy, Oklahoma, about 135 miles northwest of Oklahoma City. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Earlier in the day yesterday, police say Mr. Vance had shot and wounded a Dewey County officer, then fled in a car. Officers pursued him for about half an hour before encountering the trooper. A search initially began after he shot and wounded two police officers 8 days ago in Wellston, just outside Oklahoma City. Mr. Vance was suspected of shooting a woman and stealing her vehicle near Wellston, then driving about 8 miles to his relative's mobile home in Luther and killing two people there. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. It's 19 minutes now after the hour. It's 21 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
President Hillary Clinton is vowing that she will not be knocked off course in the election's final days, despite a new FBI email inquiry into a sexting probe of her aide's estranged husband. Clinton declared during a packed rally in Florida yesterday her campaign won't be distracted.
So no matter what is thrown at us, we need to stay focused on our goal.
Donald Trump campaigned in Las Vegas.
Her criminal action was willful, deliberate, intentional, and purposeful.
Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid says FBI Director James Comey may have broken the law by disclosing 11 days before the election word of newly discovered emails. Reid says Comey's actions may have violated the Hatch Act, which limits some political activities of federal employees. Almost 8,000 people are seeking assistance from Italy's Civil Protection Agency and are being housed in hotels and shelters following two recent earthquakes. Yesterday morning's magnitude 6.6 quake was centered in the mountainous area in central Italy. The World Series will be moving back to Cleveland. Aroldis Chapman got 8 outs in the longest relief appearance of his career, and the Chicago Cubs held off the Indians 3-2 last night, cutting the Tribes' lead in the series to 3-2. Dan Schulman had the call on ESPN.
The 0-2 pitch and a swing and a foul tip held by Contreras, and the World Series is headed back to Cleveland for Game 6.
Tomorrow night in Cleveland, it'll be Chicago right-hander Jake Arrieta against Josh Tomlin. And it was supposed to teach her husband a lesson about the wastefulness of the lottery, but it sort of backfired. A North Carolina woman who was tired of her husband wasting money on tickets bought a $10 Carolina Million scratch-off ticket instead of the Powerball tickets he asked her to buy on Saturday. But when she scratched it off to show him what a waste it was, she found out she won $1 million. The couple says they'll use the $415,000 after taxes to buy a house.
Now you listen to me. Uh-oh. One of those, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
23 minutes now after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Your 20s can be a time of striving for better things, right? Better job, bigger paycheck, a savings account. But even if you're making some progress, it can be difficult to know where you stand or how you compare to your peers. Janelle Marte, personal finance writer at the Washington Post, has a look at a new study that tries to measure this. Janelle, what are the takeaways?
I would say the biggest takeaway here is that it pays to finish college, because people who had at least a bachelor's degree, we're just much more likely to meet some of these financial milestones, like paying off their student loans or buying a home or landing a good paying job, and sometimes even more so than people who had some college but who didn't finish to earn their degrees. And I think it really was just sort of a deep dive into, you know, where you might stand on different financial milestones and, you know, how you compare to other people your age.
All right. So give us a little more then. So folks who are still struggling with student debt or figuring out ways to pay it off. I know they're
sure.
Not alone, but what are those numbers like?
So one surprising finding is that more than 40% of people above age 30 were done paying their student loans. Now, again, this is off of a sample size, so it might be different for you based on where you live and what your expenses are like, but it's still kind of optimistic, right, for people who borrow to pay for college, and 60% of the millennials surveyed said that they did borrow to pay for college. But and here's the big but, for the people who were still paying, their debt burdens really were very different. I would say the average debt load for those that were paying was $22,817, and for the majority of people with debt, they owe $10,000 or less. So, you know, for some people, the burden is very high, and for others, it's a little less and more manageable. But I think the takeaway is that there's light at the end of the tunnel, and that student loan debt really peaks for people in their mid-20s and late-20s. Mm-hmm. And by the time they were in their early 30s, they were much more likely to be done or almost done paying off their loans.
Explain this too. 93% of young adults are saving for a goal. What kind did they say?
Yeah, so I would take this one with a grain of salt. But what it means is that most of the people they surveyed want to save for something like a house or for an emergency fund or for retirement. However, most people, at least half or around half, had not even set aside $1,000 for that goal, right? So the point here is that people have things that they want to work toward, but they're struggling to do so. Many people haven't saved much. About half of people had set aside less than $1,000 for their goals, and 6% hadn't saved anything at all.
Yikes. Scary numbers. Janelle Marte, personal finance writer at The Washington Post. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. How great would it be if the post office were open 24/7, no more limited hours, and you could get your mailing and shipping done on your schedule? Well, now you can when you use Stamps.com. Print postage whenever you need it, right from your desk. Stamps.com will save you the time and hassle of going to the post office. No more rushing there during your busy day. Just use your computer and printer to get official U.S. postage for any letter or package. Then the mailman picks it up. You'll even save money with Stamps.com. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes postage plus a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone. It's at the top of the homepage, and type in the word deal. That's Stamps.com and enter deal. Again, Stamps.com and enter the code deal.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Monday, October 31, Halloween. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. An Oklahoma fugitive has been killed after an 8-day manhunt. The FBI has another 650,000 Hillary-related emails to go through. Arby's is experimenting with deer meat starting today in some markets. Cubs beat the Indians to force a Game 6 in the World Series. Why you might see a teal-colored pumpkin while trick-or-treating today. And the woman who painted the giant Donald Trump pumpkin last year is back, this time with a Hillary version. Oh, and one of those pumpkins was rotting. She had to save it with some bleach. That story in about 20 minutes. So the Cubs beat the Indians 3-2, Game 5 of the World Series last night, sending the teams back to Cleveland for Game 6 tomorrow. The Indians lead that best-of-seven series 3-2 and need to win just one of the final two games for the first World Series title since 1945. The Cubs need to win the next two games in Cleveland for their first crown in 108 years. We're joined now by author Luke Salisbury, who's written a number of books about baseball, including The Answer is Baseball and The Cleveland Indian. Luke, good morning. Got any skin, by the way, in this World Series between the Cubs and Indians?
Well, having written both nonfiction and fiction about the first Indian to play baseball, Louis Sock Alexis, who played for Cleveland, I got to tell you, I'm rooting for the Indians. But I'll also say this thing's not over yet. I think the Cubs may very well win with Arrieta tomorrow, and who knows what happens in the seventh game.
Yeah, I know what happens in the seventh game. Corey Kluber takes the mound again, right?
Yeah, well, that could be quite a game.
How about, so you mentioned that. Who was this first, was it a Native American Indian who played?
Yes, the first Native American was Louis Sock Alexis from Old Town, Maine. He had been a big college baseball star at Holy Cross and then briefly at Notre Dame, and he hit the big leagues in 1897. The Cleveland team was called Spiders, and he had this wonderful ability, great arm. He was big, he was fast, he could hit for power, and he drank himself out of baseball very, very quickly. In fact, on the 4th of July, 1897, apparently he jumped out the window of a whorehouse in Pittsburgh to avoid paying the bill, and he hurt his ankle, and his career went downhill very quickly.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
I've just been fascinated by that story, because here you have the frontier closing in the 1890s, you have baseball becoming the most important sport, and a Native American appears playing the game better than anyone had seen it played before, and then is so self-destructive. A fascinating story. But the Indians are named for him because scholars have discovered that in 1913, there is an editorial in the Sunday paper in Cleveland in which the editor says, over the weekend, I got together with the owner of the team, some people who remember, and we decided the team ought to be named Indians because of Louis Sock Alexis. So it's important to know that this team is named for an individual. And now, if we want to get into Chief Wahoo, that awful image, that's a whole other matter. And I believe the team is phasing him out anyway.
Do the Indians, do they get grief from those who don't like, you know, any of the imagery or association with Native Americans?
Well, the grief...
Not the way the Redskins do, obviously.
Not at all. The grief they did get was a woman academic about 10 years ago announced that the team was not named for Sock Alexis and that it was completely racist. Well, it turned out that she had read the Cleveland Plain Dealer, but she hadn't read the weekend edition, and it was on the editorial page on a Sunday that this story was substantiated.
Wow. So your fascination with baseball history comes from where?
Well, baseball people either really like the narrative or really like the numbers. I like the numbers, but I prefer the old ones, not the, you know, the war and the computer-generated statistics, because there's so many fascinating stories. For instance, in my book, The Answer is Baseball, looking for the best baseball trivia question ever asked, the Cubs are the only team that have been in the same place ever since 1876. You know that the National League started the year that Custer lost his scalp, and there was a team in Chicago. There's still a team in Chicago.
Very good. We're speaking live this morning with Luke Salisbury, baseball historian, author of a number of baseball books, including, as you just mentioned, The Answer is Baseball, another one called The Cleveland Indian. So where might this particular World Series go down in history? Obviously, we have huge, huge gaps for both teams in terms of when they won their last titles.
Well, I think that's what makes it so fascinating, because everyone's talked about the Cubs and their 108 years.
Yeah.
But what about the Indians? They haven't won since 1948.
Yeah.
And I live in Boston, so I can tell you about wanting to win the World Series so bad that I think I did sell my soul so that the Red Sox would win. So I completely sympathize with the Cubs, but I also sympathize with Indian fans.
Yeah, very good. Good stuff. Hey, thanks for sharing a few minutes. Nice talking to you. Luke Salisbury with us live this morning, author and baseball historian. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you're the parent of young kids, you'd like to think that after you put them to bed at night, they fall right to sleep and dream sweet dreams until the sun comes up. And while that might be true sometimes, other times they might be burning the midnight oil and some excess energy around the house. CNN says that one Florida family found that out when their home security camera caught their six-year-old living the parent-free life in the living room while the rest of the house house was asleep. The boy named Dylan didn't waste any time checking off all the boxes of things your parents tell you not to do when they're awake. Jumping on the new couch, check. Climbing on the countertops, you bet. Cartwheels in the living room by the TV, check. Though they didn't expect to have the evidence on tape, Dylan's parents weren't overly surprised by his antics. His mother told CNN that he's a, quote, force to be reckoned with.
Wow.
And as a parent, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, yep, that sounds just like Dylan.
6 years old.
Yep. Yep.
Everybody goes to bed.
Yeah, and I guess
Dylan gets up.
They didn't plan on trying to catch him. I guess his father's in the security business and was trying out some of his new cameras, and they just had it running just every night just for the heck of it. And then I guess they went to go change the battery or something, and they found this tape of him of him doing this.
He seems so tired at kindergarten. Yeah. I wonder why.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
And sometimes, Gordon, you know, the bad guys win. The Oakland Raiders set an NFL record with 23 flags for 200 yards in their game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers yesterday. The fact that so many penalties were called against the Raiders is not a complete shock. The team has been at or near the top of the league in penalties for many years. The surprising thing is that they actually won the game. The Wall Street Journal writes that in the Super Bowl era, teams have been penalized at least 20 times on 5 previous occasions. In 4 of those, the team lost. Naturally, one of those belonged to the Raiders when they were penalized 20 times in a 1996 loss to the Broncos. The Raiders broke another record in Sunday's game, but this one they can actually be proud of with 513 passing yards. Quarterback Derek Carr shattered the franchise mark for most passing yards in a game. And then single-handedly basically ended my fantasy season because I was playing against the team that had him.
Uh-oh.
I lost the game, and that's pretty much going
to
be it for me now.
Oh, sorry.
Time
to
think about next year.
Sorry to hear. Wow. Yes. Well, I know you're big on that front. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Raiders also set a good record for the, like, 5 road wins in a row.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is maybe matches some other record or is closing in on some record.
Yeah, I noticed that today. They're 5-0 on the road. Yeah. 1-2 at home or something like that.
Breathtaking. Very good. How long did that game take by with 23 penalties? Like 6 hours or something like that?
I think it just ended right before we got here.
Oof. Thank you, Mike. 14 minutes in front of the hour. If you're looking to grow or relocate your business, there are 3 numbers you should know. 10, 2000, and 6. 10 stands for Michigan being one of America's top 10 states for business. 2000 is the number of burdensome regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years. And 6 stands for Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climates. All those numbers add up to the one state that has all that and more. Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. That's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more.
Hiring people is probably the worst part of my job.
We started using ZipRecruiter about 3 months ago. One click and my job was posted to 100+ job boards, all the top sites.
All of the candidates came to my dashboard, and it's easy to compare them.
And I couldn't believe the number of great applicants we got. I don't know how we hired before ZipRecruiter.
Find the best candidates with ZipRecruiter, where your job is just one click away from 100+ job sites. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/find. That's ZipRecruiter.com/find.
Thanks for being with us. Time for a health and wellness update, and it's brought to you by Rite Aid. Get your flu shot at Rite Aid today, free with most insurance plans. Age restrictions apply in some states. See your Rite Aid pharmacist for details. Well, back in 2012, a Tennessee mom named Becky Bassalone had an idea. What if Halloween could be made a little less tricky for kids with food allergies? USA Today says her idea became what is now the Teal Pumpkin Project, a nationwide effort to encourage families to offer up some non-food treats on Halloween. You just put a teal-colored pumpkin or sign outside your door and offer trick-or-treaters glow sticks, spider rings, Halloween stickers, or other non-food goodies along with or instead of the traditional candies. You might also offer bracelets, necklaces, vampire fangs, playing cards, or bookmarks. So if you see a teal-colored pumpkin today during your trick-or-treating, now you will know why. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to FBI Director James Comey told Congress, the FBI intends to review newly discovered emails in the investigation of Hillary Clinton. Some speculated that the evidence could lead to federal charges against Clinton. But according to former prosecutors and legal experts across the political spectrum, that's unlikely. They say given the fact that they already reviewed 30,000 emails, most of which were from Clinton, and the nature of the new emails make it unlikely if federal authorities would reverse course and charge Clinton. Meanwhile, Donald Trump says Clinton has nobody but herself to blame for her mounting facing legal problems.
Next year's going to be worse. Next year's going to be worse. So she wants to double down. I think she's got bigger problems right now, if you want to really know the truth.
At a Las Vegas rally, he also said he never expected to thank disgraced former Congressman Anthony Weiner. Clinton addressed the issue at a Florida rally.
We won't be distracted no matter what our opponents throw at us. We're not going to be knocked off course. We know how much this election matters, and we know how many people are counting on us.
Meanwhile, Clinton's advisors are crafting a domestic policy agenda for the opening months of a potential presidency that's centered on three issues with some level of Republican support: an infrastructure package that emphasizes job creation, criminal justice reform, and immigration legislation. Iraqi special forces are advancing on the Islamic State-held city of Mosul from the east under heavy fire. A military official says car bombers are trying to stop the advance, but he says his troops are just 2 miles from the city. Iraqi forces and their Kurdish allies have been converging on Mosul from all directions for the past 2 weeks. We've seen penalty flags this year for a lot of wacky celebrations in NFL games, but this may be a first. Seattle Seahawks safety Earl Thomas was flagged yesterday for hugging a referee. After taking New Orleans Saints fumble in for a score, Thomas embraced an official and was flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct.
I think the ref was trying to suppress a laugh. Did you see it?
I didn't, actually. That's awesome.
You put up with it for a second, then he thought about it, and he's like, I have to throw the flag. Thanks, Jen. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Remember the Ohio woman last year who painted a giant pumpkin with Donald Trump's face on it? She's back at it this year, just in time for Halloween today. But this time, there's also a Hillary Clinton version and one for Russian President Vladimir Putin. So Donald the Trumpkin is now joined by Hillary Clinton and Vladimir Putin. They're all on the front porch of Jeanette Parassa's home in Dublin, Ohio, just outside Columbus. Russia's influence on this election cycle stood out to Ms. Paras. That's why she added Mr. Putin to the mix. She chose similar sizes for Clintkin, 145 pounds, and Trumpkin, 133 pounds. Pumpkin, or rather Putkin's pumpkin, is a whopping 341 pounds. She wouldn't tell CNN if she has a favorite, but she did share which pumpkin was what she called the most challenging. She said she had a rotting problem with one of the characters, but wouldn't say who it was. She says she did have to perform brain surgery, remove the stem, and apply bleach. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Thanks for listening, and we'd love to hear from you. Leave a review and comment for us on iTunes. For more from This Morning Show, check us out at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.